Oh, wait, maybe I should have.
I was wondering if it was my headphones went out or what was going
We go live on YouTube and all hell breaks loose. I'm Nick Roush. Oh, no. What's
Your
happening?
YouTube's
I'm hearing an
on.
Echo now. Jesus.
YouTube's on.
I left the YouTube on. All hell's broken loose. I messed up. I screwed the pooch. All right, we're good to go now. We changed things up, and I think this might be a new routine this spring, doing a little Thursday afternoon lunch with 11 personnel around noon. Just chat with you. Hang out. Thursdays are a little bit slower. We can kind of review some of the football news from the week, maybe get some guests on. So could be a good time, should be a good time. Today, we're going to be talking to you about National Signing Day because – it was a little more eventful than we expected when we were discussing the events a week ago.
Yeah, Kentucky got a big flip. Kendrick Gilbert started the morning. We had to wait a little bit, Nick. 8 a.m. announcement turned into a...
What, 9:30?
9-8. Yeah, 9-ish announcement. But I think, number one, we can start here with the good news. Just, I think it's a solid, good recruiting win in the line of scrimmage. Gilbert, there's a lot to like about him. I think it's a guy Kentucky wanted for a long time. They stayed on him. And finally, we're able to get him to flip. I think some things bounced their way, coaching change, all of that. But a big win and another, I think, solid recruiting win for the defensive line. Quietly, they've just kind of kept stacking in that defensive line room, and I think Gilbert fits what they want to do on defense on the line of scrimmage. So I think that was a big recruiting win. I think Kentucky's a little bit finding value here in the Midwest going in and winning some defensive line recruiting battles. Last year, Deion Walker, obviously. This year, Kendrick Gilbert, and we've seen some of the success they've had in Detroit in the past. So I think a solid win here for Kentucky.
Yeah, and when you look at Kendrick Gilbert on paper, four-star recruit, number 375 overall in the 1-3 consensus to help Kentucky get into the top 30 nationally, he is kind of what you look for in a Kentucky 3-4 defensive lineman. The length, size, 6'5", what, about 300 pounds or so, give or take? Like, yeah, I don't have it exactly pulled up right now, but he has that. All right, he could play a couple different spots on the defensive line depending on how much weight he puts on, because he's a big body, the kind of guys they're looking for in A. and Mar Stewart's group.
Yeah, I think on three, our database has him measured and verified with 35-inch arms. So that's, you know, on a 6'5" frame, you're looking at a pretty good wingspan there. I think if you kind of turn on the tape and look at him, he's got a pretty stout lower half, so projecting him out, long arms, good size in the lower body, he's going to be able to hold up at the point of attack. I think you look at his future position, you kind of look at that boundary nose tackle, so four technique, three technique. But I also think he could potentially play some zero there inside for Kentucky. I think so. You multi-positional versatility is big, I think, on that line of scrimmage. I think you could project him playing some of those two spots, and then you watch him. I think there's real potential with him at pass rushing because of that length, Nick. Because he can swim, he can get off blocks. That length gives him some potential to fine tune some pass rush skills. And when you look at that inside position, that's not something Kentucky's really had since Calvin Taylor is a pass rusher there. Phil Hoskins a little bit flashed in 2020, but outside of that, they really haven't had a pass rusher there. So if he could become that, you know, Deion Walker's obviously going to become that. But if he could add to that and give Kentucky that down the road, I think that's going to be very valuable.
I think a key word you had there, down the road. It's pretty rare that defensive linemen do make an impact right away, with Deion Walker being one of the exceptions. But Gilbert does have some growing to do. His get-off isn't exactly what you'd like to see. He hasn't been an absolute terror in some of these games. He did play at a very high level, and as Stoops said in his quote, like, Cathedral's a good program, and Stoops said he's got that winning mentality. That is a big-time program. getting in here. Like I'm not going to expect him to be in the rotation right away. But with that background, I do expect him to take steps forward, right? Like he's not one of those that I'm worried a whole lot about.
Maybe it's Khalil Saunders. Yeah. Maybe it's Khalil Saunders thing where he plays four games, gets in. We see him a little bit. I think really him and Tavian Gadsden.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kentucky did a good job here. Like Tavian Gadsden got a nice little rankings bump here at the end. On three has him as like a top 250 prospect. Yeah. He's top 500 in the consensus. Gilbert's inside the top 400. Historically, those are really good prospects for Kentucky on the defensive line. And now you got six former top 500 recruits in that room, and that's not counting the two transfers they've added in Keyshawn Silver and Darian Henry Young. So they're doing a good job stacking recruiting wins in that room. I think specifically Gadsden and Gilbert, they just check boxes they want. Length, number one. Obviously, I think both can maybe play more than one position. I think Gadsden's, you know, more of a end tackle tweener, and both have potential, I think, because of that length to be have pass rushing value down the road. So I just think there's a lot to like there with what they're doing in that room, stacking good recruiting wins. The offensive line, Nick, you know, this time 2 years ago was getting all the shine. Quietly, Kentucky's done really solid work in that defensive line room. And I think they're built to succeed long-term on the defense because that defensive line is in good shape. Then you add in the coaching stability factor. Amar Stewart signs that extension through 2024, so you're going to have him. So what's this going to be? His first year was, what, 2020? So this will be his, what, fourth year as the assistant, as the defensive line coach in Lexington. That's a long time for any position coach, modern-day college football. So there's a lot to like. I think that arrow's trending up, and on paper, this should be one of the best positional units on the team. You got a potential superstar in Walker. You've got balance. You've got class balance. I think you're going to have good depth here. You've got guys that should be able to play, and guys you have playing experience too coming back. So I think 2023 season needs to be a big one for the defensive line.
You know, and you mentioned Stewart, a guy who we've kind of questioned his recruiting chops over the years, and he put in some work to make this happen. And Kentucky was fortunate the kind of the way things went about. Gilbert took all of his official visits over the summer. Thought Kentucky was going to close then. Purdue ends up getting the commitment after the cam was kicked down the road and decisions were delayed kind of multiple times. But they didn't close the door completely. And when Jeff Brohm leaves to go to Louisville, opens the door for Kentucky to make a move. Ryan Walters did get Gilbert on campus last week, but Kentucky got the last laugh. They got the last unofficial visit to pull off the flip on National Signing Day, a big get. But as the door opens for one guy, it kind of, I don't want to say closed, but you did have a sliding door sort of moment with Wu Spencer, where it really felt like this was a one horse race for a long time in the three-star offensive lineman's recruitment. And yesterday, he ultimately ends up picking Louisville. And I think Jeff Brohm played a significant part of that. I don't know how interested the Cards were in Wu Spencer until Jeff Brohm got there. But this was sort of an unusual recruitment, Luckett, because he goes to Mail for 3 years. He transfers to New Albany, get his grades up, help qualify. And it always felt like he was we'll take him. But there wasn't this sort of this big fervor, this big hoopla over him until he got his grades right. And then early signing period happens, and all of a sudden, there's this guy standing around that could be a high-quality football player just waiting to be signed. And he took an official visit to Kentucky, ends up taking an official visit to Louisville. And going into this, like it felt like a toss-up where Kentucky, they had longevity on their side. They had the kind of the proven commodity there with the big blue wall. But the one thing, I mentioned this to you, that I always worried about, we've seen it in Lexington. getting pitching the chance for an lineman to play defense, kids would rather tackle other guys than not be tackled, right? Then try to stop the other one. So that wrinkle was always there, and I think that's ultimately what won out for the Cards.
Yeah, really three things to me here, Nick. Number one, on Roy Spencer's recruiting profile, it says New Albany Senior High School. But to me, it's really Louisville Male High School. Getting a kid to Louisville from Louisville Male is like getting to a kid to Kentucky from the 606. Like, it's a very – they have a very heavy recruiting – Louisville has a very heavy recruiting advantage for any kid that goes to Male.
I would We've talked about it. Frederick Douglass, like, as of like right?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
So, like, anytime a kid goes to Male, there's – Kentucky has to overcome that. Number one. Number two, I think the O-line, D-line debate.
Yeah.
I think that's important to remember here. And I think you pointed it out. Kentucky's won out on that D-line before. You look at Rodgers and McCall, number one of Detroit, were able to land blue chip recruiting wins essentially because they let these guys come to Lexington and play defense. And then number three, I just think it's an example. Like, it's just going to be tougher with Braun there, right? Full stop. Kentucky's going to have the advantage for out of kids not in the city of Louisville. Kentucky's going to have the advantage over Louisville. But inside that city, it's just going to be tougher. I think this was the first battle. You can debate how much interest Kentucky had or one way or the other, or Louisville, how, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. But, like, just here, there's just going to be battles. And, like, Louisville people are very excited, basically for the optics of Spencer, right?
Yes.
Local kid, good recruiting ranking, aspirations.
Yes.
These are guys they haven't gotten, and they got one here. And so you add that on top of, you know, getting Micah Carter out of St. X. You add that on top of getting Sadiq Clemens from Western Kentucky, Henderson County High School. Just all of those, that the optics alone of that, in-state, kids with other Power 5 offers, line of scrimmage prospects. Louisville, that they, in a lot of ways, they see that as how Kentucky's built kind of their current stature, and they see that as maybe taken away from Kentucky doing that. So the optics of that, I think Louisville have fans have a lot to be excited about. But just in general, in the city of Louisville, in the metro area, if it comes down to Kentucky, like, it's going to be a fight for these guys. Kentucky's not going to – they're going to lose some battles, but they're also going to win some battles. So just watching that is going to be intriguing moving forward. But it's also important to remember that that's not everything. Like, Kentucky's class is going to have to, you know, come from other areas. But they're down the road, Nick, there is going to be a legit top 200, top 150 prospect that these two schools are going to have to fight for. I don't know if it's going to – I don't think it's going to be the 2024 class. It's probably going to be down the road, but that's coming. And in the meantime, they're going to have these little mini battles right now for these three-star prospects. And Louisville won this one. And they have a right to be – optics alone, it's exciting for them because if the shoe was on the other foot 6 years ago, we would – Kentucky would have been doing the same thing. And so just get ready for that. That's the Brohm effect because – it's just going to be different with him, there, holding the call sheet in Louisville.
Yeah, it symbolically, especially after they just didn't recruit kids from aspirations for the last, I don't know how many years, right? Like, it was two coaches just wouldn't go right down the street to recruit at that gym, and Kentucky just kind of got to pick who they wanted for the most part. Outside of Jeff actually getting a couple of them, he got Rondale Moore. I think Milton Wright might have worked out with Vaughn as well.
And that was working. That was before really Kentucky put Merrill in Louisville, right? Like,
They
sent Merrill in there and really he built up that aspirations connection relationship, that's when Kentucky started getting a lot of these guys. And it started in that 2019 class when Merrill goes in there, gets Weaver, gets Jerry Casey, and starts building that aspirations connection. Mm-hmm.
I guess
And Weaver's a guy that
class too.
Yeah, he was 2020 the next year. Right. But Weaver's really the one they point to a lot. Every year, Kentucky plays Louisville. J.J. Weaver makes a play, and it's like, that's a guy that should be, like, interception 2021. Last year, he gets a sack fumble. That is, like, what they point to. But what you don't see them pointing to is the other guys that Kentucky has gotten that haven't panned out here, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
There's been some transfers out of this class from or out of this program with guys from Louisville. And so it's not the whole – this thing is a lot – it's not necessarily like on-field production. It is just optics. I mean, that's – and program momentum you can build when you get a recruiting win like that. And so that's just going to be something to follow. Like, I eventually, mean, Kentucky, like, I'm very interested. Like, Louisville's going to win an out of state, not out of state, in state recruiting battle. Maybe a kid from Western Kentucky, Bowling Green. And they're going to sell the crap out of it, even if that kid's like a mid 3-star recruit. I mean, and you saw the basketball team last night. I don't know if you saw Louisville's Twitter, the basketball Twitter.
Woo! Like,
yeah. That's also goes with the football basketball school thing, right? Taking a shot.
We did this in 2019, though, when they got all those guys, and really JJ's the only one that panned out. They had 5 kids from Louisville, right? And Casey played a couple snaps, you know. I mean, he played a little bit, but for the most part, you know, the kid from Doss, he was gone within a year and just quit playing football. Like, a lot of these guys didn't pan out. So I think the number one overarching theme, like you said, it's symbolic, but – you also can't put all your eggs in a basket of we just got to get every kid from Louisville because you don't have to. And for me, in the case of Woo Spencer, if you want to look at it from this standpoint, if he wanted to play defensive lineman, you got a better defensive lineman signed yesterday in Kendrick Gilbert. You know, why would you you wouldn't take him as defensive lineman? If this kid's smart, he'll end up moving to offensive line. Because I think he actually has a very high, like he's a better offensive lineman.
His senior tape is good. Offensive line tape is good.
Yeah,
and he held. So maybe, we got eyes on him at a camp, and he held up when there were some good players at that Kentucky camp. Like, I am particularly like I could see him being a multi-year Power 5 starter at offensive guard for sure. Whether he plays that or not, we'll see.
Right, but. Here's the thing you mentioned, though, Luckett, and it's the when you talked about the top 200 prospect, if you thought the Keontae stuff was nuts, it's going to be freaking banana land. Because yesterday, for those who are really in the weeds and just, you know, refreshing message boards and all that, freaking Chris has got Dave jumping through all sorts of hoops. And I know a lot of people out there aren't Dave Lackford fans. I love Dave. Dave's a great dude. He doesn't take himself too seriously. But he's plugged in, and he flipped his pick, what, 5 times in the last week? I mean, and people were losing their freaking minds every single time. It was coming down to the wire where nobody really knew until, you know, about 30 minutes before when I'm showing up to Aspirations, and it's like, it's probably going to be Louisville, isn't it? But if you thought that was some hoopla, just wait until there's a big-name guy. That's going to be it's going to be a lot.
Wasn't just Dave either. Like, Steve Wiltfong went back and forth.
Yeah.
About the last 24 hours. So it's always going to be expect a little bit of drama, right, with that when you're going to the Aspirations announcement. So,
right.
Yeah, we'll see. See down the road how that plays out, no doubt.
Yeah. Spoke to Hayes Johnson some yesterday, though. He was even he wasn't sure what it was going to be going down the stretch. But it's still – that was the first time I'd been to a commitment that it wasn't Kentucky since Damian Harris. And – it's a little weird, but it's still like I love seeing these kids just how excited they are to make it. And I know for him, where you know, he thought that day might not come there for a little bit, but he stuck with it. Really cool to see. But you know, rivalry, back on.
You felt like the USC guy at Michael Drennan's announcement yesterday, I'm assuming. Our guy flew in from California to see Drennan's, and he commits to Kentucky.
That was so awkward, and that kid. He's not even playing football anymore, right? Like he didn't play at all.
Hanging out
in
the portal.
Yeah, bizarre. Speaking of Hayes, though, and speaking of optics, got an in-state commitment today. What a weird timing, right, Luckett?
Interesting timing. I like this kid a lot.
Yeah. No, and I make the joke because I don't think it was a coincidence. they're probably saving it up. I thought actually they were going to save up Hayes Johnson for, you know, maybe potentially if Wu goes elsewhere. But put on his tape and just watch him. Like, he spends half the highlight reel just pulling down the line and blowing dudes up. Abiselm, really, it's between him or Hayes Johnson as to who's the number one or two ranked players from the state of Kentucky.
This guy's number one.
Yeah, he's number one.
This guy's number one.
And he is he freaking blows dudes up, man. It's awesome.
Yeah, just very interesting. Like, I hope we get eyes on him at camp, and I hope we can get some legit kind of measuring, like some length measurables and all that, because we had on three has him listed at 6'4", 295. So I'm interested to see. I want to see him, like, I want to size him up in person. Number one, like, this, he's an athlete. Like, he can move. Kentucky needs to get more athletic on the offensive line if they're going to run this outside zone scheme, which I still think is the plan. You need guys like this. He climbs to the second level with ease. He's a very good puller. He plays. When he does that, he doesn't get, like, he stays balanced and he's able to latch on to smaller defenders and finish blocks. He shows power at the point of attack, plays within himself. It has protection. Like, there's a rep on his tape where it's a sprint out the other way. So you have to kind of work. You're working with the guard down the line and you want to move your body. You want to move your backside towards where the quarterback is rolling to. Well, they run, the defense runs like a guard tackle stunt, which is not super, like, it's a stunt you got to really kind of work together with your guard to pick up. He does a great job picking that up. He steps down, gets a good shot in on the end who's stepping in. He breaks off and gets the tackle who's wrapping around. It's a really good pass set. I think inside, like, he shows some really good, I think, play strength with strong hands. He's able to throw defenders to the ground. There's just a lot to like about him. And in the film post I wrote today, Nick, I typically don't do player comps in this just because it's so hard on the high school tapes. But, like,
especially offensive linemen.
Like, Kenneth Horsey, I think, is a real good comp for this guy. I think he can play guard or tackle at the next level. He's got really good positional athleticism. I don't know if, like, necessarily just power is his number one strength. But you do see him drive block guys off the line of scrimmage, which to me is like, when I watch these high school guys, one of my number one things is, all right, you're one-on-one head up, like Oklahoma drill in real life, right? Can you dominate the guy ahead of you? And he has a couple tapes of that where he's just straight drive blocking and gets a pancake block. Like, that's one of the number one things I look for in offensive line guys. I just think there's a lot here. I think he's a scheme fit at Kentucky. I could see him as a tackle at the next level if the measurements work out. And Kentucky needs tackles. And so I think there's a lot to like about this kid. I really do. And I'm interested to see what he does camp-wise. I want to see him at a Kentucky camp, but if he camps in other places, I could see him potentially blowing up. Like, this is a guy that I think should be a four-star prospect. I think there's a lot to like with him. I just want to know what his legit measurables are, height and length. To see if, because then you can really project him to play tackle. But I think there's a lot to like about him. I really do.
Big yeah, and he's a Reds fan, Luckett. So you all can catch up and talk about who even plays for the Cincinnati Reds anymore.
That's a great question. Like, we could do a game. Does this guy play for the Reds?
Because they sold off. I mean, it was an absolute fire sale.
It's a AAA team.
But I'm. This is also a rarity too, where we get Luckett. I don't want to say selling out's not the right word, but you're rarely this bullish on a kid that's committing in February. I mean, it's rare. So
yeah, I like this kid a lot. I do. I do want to see how he develops, but there's a lot to like there. I think this is put a pin in this recruiting one. This is a big one. I could see a potentially ranking blow up for him if he goes through the full process.
Oh, over on the YouTube and, chat. Oh, go on, Luckett, before you.
Yeah, I'll just say, like, in the past, Kentucky, this is how they've won. Like, landing these offensive linemen early and getting them in and then developing him and getting him on the field. I think it's specifically in-state landing these guys. And I count like Ohio too, as these in-state guys from your home territory, getting them locked up early, getting them on campus, and developing and getting him on the field. And I think Selm, I definitely see a place for him, either whether it's left guard, left tackle. Like he's definitely going to be a guy I project to be a multi-year starter at Kentucky. I think there's a lot to like about him.
We also want to say that we like our producer. Joel on the chat says, Stephen Peake killing it with the B-roll. And folks, if you haven't seen Stephen's latest video, it's some of my favorite work he's done, especially when he's got the footage of him holding up the three sign. I've laughed out loud multiple times in that. So if you haven't checked it out, do it. Look it. I've also got some scoop for you. And I haven't even shared this with you yet, but you know what? Let's just drop it on the 11 Personnel podcast. One person, Straight Killer, says the kicker we got from Fordham will be our field goal kicker or kickoff or both. I don't know if he's going to be our kicker, but I did learn that the reason why Chance Poor returned to Kentucky is to not be the field goal kicker. It's to be the punter.
Interesting.
Yeah. So who knows what's going on in that room, but when I heard that, take it for what you will. I don't know if he's punted since high school, but take that for what you will.
I didn't think Wilson Berry was terrible at the end of the year. I will say that. Like, I wasn't expecting much, but I thought he was solid.
Fine. Yeah. So there's just, yeah. That whole room right now is a mess.
I had no idea.
I mean, like, they've got like seven kickers, punters. It's just a mess. Trying to sort it out is difficult. We can't handicap it properly, but if you can handicap anything properly, you should head on over to MyBookie. I mean, that is where you make some money. Look, I did not do well conference championship weekend. I don't think I cashed one ticket at all.
Yeah. My props were not great either.
But the good news is, though, is when you use MyBookie and you put in promo code personnel, or you just scan the code that's on your screen right now, they're going to hook you up. They're going to match your deposit with up to, what is it, $50? This is taking forever. The one time I want to load it up. They will match. It's a new deposit bonus. It's a 10% cash bonus on any first-time deposits up to $2,000. Minimum amount is $50. The maximum amount receivable is $200. So just check it out right now. Put in the promo code personnel. They're going to hook you up with your deposit. Do that right now. You asked for it. They got it. It's the best. It's a unique bonus just for sports bettors who want to focus on what to bet and not a payout sweat. So use that personnel podcast promo. Personnel, pregame, live lines, Super Bowl props. We've got 2 weeks to figure out our props to get better at these Super Bowl props. Bet everything from the opening coin toss, length of the national anthem, to the color of the Gatorade dumped on the winning coach. And lucky it. This is just a guess. Our boy Chris Stapleton is doing the national anthem. I would bet that a country music singer is going to go under on the national anthem. Like, he's not going to be one of these big R&B kind of singers with the big voices that's going to really hold the notes for very long. I would think that the under might be the way to go on the anthem for Chris Stapleton.
Hasn't the under hit on that like 9 out of 11 or something? I feel like I've read that. Like, it usually goes under.
And they take them off the board typically early. So get on over to MyBookie now. Go put in the promo code personnel. It's going to be – they're going to match your deposit, initial deposit. It's going to be awesome. It's a unique deposit bonus that lets you cash in and out quickly. Head to MyBookie.ag. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Look at your Bengals, though. Are we blaming the refs? Are you blaming the refs? Or are you just going to blame it on Chris Jones wrecking hell?
Chiefs deserve to win the game. I will say, they won the turnover battle. They were more efficient in the red zone on opportunities. Mahomes was great. Line of scrimmage, offensive line, defensive line was better than Bengals. But what I do want to say is I'm like, they got every call like in the second half, like every 50-50 call they got. And I really wanted to point that out for when we get this college football playoff in college, in the home games,
it's going to matter.
That is right. Like that is going to be a huge advantage in some of these environments, especially when you get just anything. Like if you're playing a name brand school, if you're a lower level, maybe lower, like a Big 12 team, you get a home game against, I don't know, an SEC power, Notre Dame. Like let's say Notre Dame goes somewhere. That's going to, like, these environments are going to create atmospheres like that where these refs are going to have some tougher calls. And every call in these close games, everything is just going to be magnified, especially on that stage. I mean, the refs – that I mean, the five-down thing, Nick, was just
– unacceptable.
I mean, that – it almost looked like the back judge, he got, like, buzz from New York to stop the play. And then he runs in there, and then he gets the stop. And then they double down with the defensive holding on the next –
that was a bad call. That was a bad call. That was a home field call. The one that was shocking to me that I think could have been a huge one was they didn't call the late hit on Burrow.
On Burrow. And then on the grounding, they called the grounding, all right? If you want to call – fine. If you want to call the grounding. Fine, but the dude who forced the grounding was Jones, who had the clear hands to the face, and they have been called. That's been like an emphasis rule. I've seen that called more in the NFL and in college this year than I can ever remember. Mm-hmm. And they just totally whiff on that. And it's just like, you know, you don't call a late hit. And let's be honest, if that happened to Mahomes, that thing is getting thrown.
They're throwing three,
and then you don't.
Yeah.
And then you don't call the hands of, like, it was just like, man, what are they, like, what's going on here? The Chiefs got every call. Now, they deserve to win the game, but they got every call. They're like, not, like, in these bigger moments, in these atmospheres, like, we're going to have to deal with that in college, and I'm fascinated because the overreactions are going to be even more in college football than even the NFL. I think that's going to be something to look for. And then the 49ers Eagles game, I've never seen injury stuff like that.
It's almost like Kyle Shanahan made a deal with the devil and the devil's cashing in early because
The quarterback stuff, right? Yeah.
I mean, it is unreal. They were down to their fourth quarterback and he got concussed. Like it was shocking.
It's absolutely It's also a thing that maybe downtrodden fan base want to say, well, this only happens to us. Well, 49ers got, what, 5 Super Bowls and it happened to them. Like, this weird stuff happens sometimes.
To happen to on a play that didn't look like the most severe injury, too, you know, I mean, it just looked like how many times have you seen that?
Typical strip sack, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it happens all the time. So it – and that was a buzzkill, too, because I thought that was going to be a really
– first possession, I mean, literally – literally first possession.
Yeah, that was a real, real bummer, real downer. We can handicap the Super Bowl next week, but I said going in that I was going to pick the AFC team regardless to win, but I do worry about the Chiefs' inability to run the football because, I mean, Joe Burrow had the longest run of the day.
Well, the thing with the Chiefs is they have to get under center to run it. If they can get under center, they can run it a lot better. They couldn't get under center because of Mahomes' ankle. So if that ankle's better off 2 weeks and they can get under center, they'll be able to run the ball better with more efficiency.
Also, Pacheco, every time he runs the ball, he could get called for targeting the way he uses his head. Is like
he's a lightning.
Arm. I mean, he just
he's a lightning bolt, man. I will say, like, it was Jones. Like, Mahomes was awesome, and Jones was, I think, probably their MVP. But they got they're like secondary role players, I would say. Like the Pachecos, the MVSs, they're secondary. Michael Dana on the interior. Those guys really like stepped up and played above their heads, I thought, for the Chiefs. And I think that really kind of made the difference for them. And then Boyd going out for the Bengals was a huge loss.
Yeah.
Because it allowed them to double bracket, because the Bengals couldn't block a front four, and then it allowed them to bracket Chase and Higgins on the outside, and then you had Hayden Hurst and Trenton Irwin
had to beat one on one, and they just
couldn't do it. But if you have Boyd over the middle, there in that 2 minute, it makes the world of difference. Because if you want to play like that, Boyd was going to beat whoever he was on, especially with Snead out, their best nickel corner. I think the Bengals go down and score, at least get a field goal on one of those two drives there at the end if they have Boyd. But, you know, that's football. Shit like, or stuff like that's going to happen.
And like you, I'm sure you believe that they were going to win when they, what was it, 3rd and 17, and they complete that pass to Hayden Hurst. You're just like, oh, Joe Burrow's about to do it again.
Yeah.
But
field position was unfortunate, both those possessions. Like, also special teams, the Chiefs won that game, and they stunk on special teams all year. So that field position didn't help. But yeah, I mean, it just unfortunate. But that's how all these Chiefs Bengals games have been. The Chiefs still haven't scored a fourth quarter touchdown on the Bengals in 4 games.
That's crazy.
Like the Bengals have them kind of their offense as much as you can have it figured out. They have it figured out. It's just and offensively they've been good against the Chiefs. I mean, 2 games they were just awesome. The 2 home games, but the protection was just the red zone was just. Hurst should have caught that ball. I mean, it was a tough throw. And then there at the end, like Higgins not getting out of bounds there was big because they just didn't have time. And then Jones blew up the second down play, and Burrow kind of had to throw it away for the field goal before the half. I mean, that was the big – I think that if that last drive, if it's a typical red zone drive, the Bengals probably score, but they were just crunched for time there at the end. And then – so, I mean, these games come down – they're going to come down to the wire with these two. Everything – every one of them has been a 3-point game, and then the same thing happened here. And so they'll be meeting again for sure. Yeah.
It's fun to watch, which if you need a football fix, you can watch Za'Darius Smith hit a golf ball tonight. Yeah. Pro Bowl.
Did you see Orlovsky – did you see Orlovsky put out the – of Za'Darius had his hands wrong. Like, he had left over – instead of right over left, he had left over right and was swinging it like that. Well, he actually hit it a good ways, but.
I was trying to look it up.
Dude, have you ever swung a baseball bat, man?
That's what I mean. I'm pretty sure he's a terrible golfer. And, like, you know, I thought I saw a clip of that. So the fact that he's in there, it will be fun. They're having a tug of war competition on Sunday. That'll be fun to watch, like, Trent Williams and these big dudes play tug of war. They're going to have a dodgeball game tonight. So. It'll be fun. It's something different. So I'm, you know, Thursday's a bad sports night. I might pop it on for a little bit, but not a whole lot of football to get us through till the Super Bowl. One person also asked, does anybody know that Darius Cannon committed to Kentucky on Tuesday? He was on Rivals and now he's not there. What's the deal with Darius Cannon? He's a walk on, so we don't really.
He was a guy that I think he camped Nick, and there was maybe a reported offer, but you know how those go.
Yeah, it's like an offer, but it's not non-committable offer, that sort of deal.
But I think he is going to be maybe an intriguing walk-on to watch. I think he's from Gainesville, Georgia, maybe, or maybe Florida.
Yeah.
So he's going to be a guy, I think, to watch here. But, yeah, he is a preferred walk-on there at wide receiver.
Yeah, and it's no offense to all of our PWOs out there, but there's so many of you, we can't catch them all. Yeah,
this is an interesting question right here, Nick. Straight Killer 369. Do you foresee any surprise positions of need that we might add after everyone's spring practices conclude via the transfer portal? So right, the transfer portal opens May 1st, closes May 15th, and that's the last window. So you got a 2-week period there. I think linebacker is important there, Nick. I think tackle is a position everybody's going to see. After Gilbert was added, they have 84 scholarships accounted for, by my count. And so we'll see what they do. But, yeah, I foresee maybe Kentucky adding 2 to 3 more transfers, and I think you're going to see maybe 2, 3, 4 players potentially leave the program after spring practice. So that's going to be something to watch out for. Off-ball linebacker obviously stands out, and I think offensive tackle. And potentially kicker, too. Those are the three I would be watching, definitely.
Yeah, and then it just comes down to injuries. You know, we've had back-to-back years with season-ending injuries in the spring. It was D'Eriq Jackson last year, or the year before last. I'm getting Vito Tisdale. D-Jack, Vito Tisdale. I mean, hell, you had Chris Oates' stroke. I mean, like, there, you just, you never know. So, something that just, you kind of wait and see. But luckily, that second transfer portal window is there for you to take advantage of. Did want to mention our favorite guy, Shane Beamer. He was back in the news yesterday, doing something good. He signed a five-star, Nicholas Harbor. And if you follow 1-3 Recruits, which if you aren't yet, why? What's your deal? Go follow that Twitter account. They've been talking about him quite a bit throughout his recruitment because this dude's a freak. He's 6'5", 240, and is a track star. I mean, he's an enormous human, and he's beating sprinters that are the size of Jordan Anthony. He's an unreal athlete. Came down to Oregon or South Carolina. Ends up picking South Carolina. They say they're going to play him at tight end or receiver, which is great news, Luckett, which means we'll never have to worry about him in South Carolina.
I mean, we've talked about this. It's going to be the offseason of Beamer. They are doing, recruiting-wise, they're doing some really good things. Harbor now, Nick, he is a freak, and he's got all these measurables, but he's, it's a little unknown at football because they don't know what position he's going to play, you know. Putting him a tight end, that doesn't make much sense to me. Like, if you give me a guy like that, he's rushing the passer.
He's an edge, yeah, all day. That's your, don't get quarterback, man.
That this is your future. Let's teach him passers. This is how you're going to get paid.
Yeah.
So that, I did find that intriguing. But you move forward, like, they've got the number one tackle committed in 2024. He's a South Carolina prospect or native. I think there's another top five offensive tackle they're in on. They already have Dante Reno at quarterback, which is a guy Kentucky was interested in back when Cone was here the first run. So they're just, recruiting-wise, they're doing good. Now, if you look at their class, it's essentially what Kentucky did last year. It is it's a top 20 class in star rating. It's ranked number 16 overall. So it's not like they're recruiting at a top five national championship level, but it is a good class. But we've seen South Carolina have these classes before. They had them all the time with Will Muschamp.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a lot of momentum as a program right now. Even when they lost, they lost a lot of players in the transfer portal. Like, good players are going to other Power 5 programs. And they did not have the transfer class that they had last year. But they are, overall, they're in a good spot. And the social media program, right? I mean, they're going to get attention because they're out in front and catching videos. And you can't blame them, you know. They are... going to be a trendy pick here heading into the offseason. They got Spencer Rattler back. That's one, to me, that's a key game for Kentucky next year. They really need to go win that game. It's on the road. It's second last game of the year, I believe. It's right the week after Kentucky plays Alabama, but South Carolina's got a tough schedule too. That's a game Kentucky needs to get back on the right side of. And, you know, they're doing some good things, and they're just going to be a program that people talk about a lot this offseason. Them in Louisville specifically, Nick, just because Louisville too, with the coaching change, Brom coming home, Louisville schedule was very,
God, that's a freaking
very manageable.
To man, say, man, well, you're being, that's a nice way to put it. Very manageable. They don't play anybody.
Yeah, but they still got 10 Power 5 opponents.
True.
That's a lot for a program like Louisville.
Ain't playing nobody, Paul.
And so, like, there's going to be 10 Power 5 opponents plus Notre Dame. They got the 8 ACC, Indiana, Kentucky, Notre Dame. That, like, I know people are, like, the easy saying they say is, like, oh, this Louisville schedule's cake. It's still 10 Power Conference opponents. There's still going to be some challenges. They are not going to, like, I'm willing to bet. I don't think, like, unless Louisville is just awesome in 50-50 games, they're not going a 9-3. Like, 7-5, 8-4 is probably where they're going to end up.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because you just – toss-ups are toss-ups for a reason. You can't win them all.
They're going to have 6-7 toss-up games. Yeah.
And they're going to have some Jeff Braum meltdowns too. Like, you know, it's he wins some games he shouldn't. He loses some games he shouldn't. See Rutgers. Like, I can go down the list. There's a lot of them throughout the years. They do have a couple Thursday nights, though. So, party deck, Luckett? Huh?
Party deck? I don't know. You'll be there. You just walk down the street and you're there.
Yeah, yeah. But my favorite headline, though, of the last week was a quote from Kirk Ferentz. I don't anticipate any staff changes. His son Brian has been conceivably a dead man walking and the biggest joke in all of college football for a year plus. And he can he refuses to fire his son, Brian Ferentz, who is an objectively awful play caller. And we had this conversation ahead of the Music City Bowl. Nobody's an offensive coordinator for as long as he is, unless you're there's something behind the scenes that, like, he can't get a head coaching job elsewhere. Or there's something behind the scenes where you're terrible and just can't get fired because your dad's the head coach. This is going to sink. Like, Kirk Ferentz might end up getting fired because he won't fire his son. It's hilarious. I love it. I cannot believe that they were able to get Cade McNamara with the promises of still playing for Brian Ferentz. That's, I think, the most shocking part of it all, is that they were actually able to do have some success in the portal without changing offensive coordinators.
That was the first thing I was going to bring up, because I figured, like, the conversation would have been what they're going to do on offense. They're probably going to make a change, get a play caller in here. And that maybe that wasn't the conversation. So that – fascinating. Like, we have – like, it wasn't that long ago when they were competent on offense with Brian Ferentz. It has been – like, they're never going to – like, the quote that Ferentz brought out is their record is – like, they have an 800 winning percentage or something. I don't know. When they score 24 points. Like, not asking for a lot. But a lot of that's because their defense is so good. Like, how long is their defense going to stay at a top five level? That would be my big concern if I'm an Iowa fan. Like Phil Parker's making magic over there. And if, you know, what if maybe the talent dries up a little bit on that side, and then or they have a bad class or two, and then the defense is not at that level. But, yeah, it's a great chance for Brian Ferentz. Like, he now they got him a quarterback that's competent, and some other, I think, you know, a tight end, Eric All, that I think can play, and the offensive line should be better. But it's hard not to look at it and be like, dude, you just, like, just won't fire your son. Like, this is not any other person would have been fired for this performance, no matter what the situation was on offense.
And it's not just a one off either. Like, it's a steady regression, and
Back-to-back years where you're just terrible. I mean, flat-out terrible on offense. And part of it is Ferentz's fault. Like, last year, you had a problem. Go out and get a transfer quarterback or transfer receiver or something. And even if it's an FCS guy, and they didn't. They ran it back with Spencer Petras. And it's just like, you know, and those receivers. And then, like, they had two younger promising receivers that left the program that were four-star recruiting wins that played early. And, like, you didn't develop those guys at all. So, yeah, I found it interesting, definitely. And that's just, it's going to be a huge, because the fan base is really not, like, you just go with, like, if Scott Docterman or our guys of the Hawkeye Report here at On3, Tom K. Kurt, I think, is our top guy. Just go look at the quote tweets, right?
Yeah.
And then Nick, being at that, remember the back and forth he had with, I'm trying to think of that guy. I thought he wrote for one of the newspapers. I thought he was one of the bigger beat reporters.
I don't remember, but it was contentious as hell. Like, it looked like there was going to be a fight in the press room.
Yeah, and there was apparently, like, Ferentz hadn't talked to the media since October. Brian Ferentz, that is.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot. It's pretty contentious there. I'm just fascinated to see how that plays out. It's an very interesting decision by Kirk Ferentz. And that's like a national story. Because Iowa's a big enough program, and they're so bad. Like, everybody knows they're bad, right? Terrible on offense. And it's like a joke. Everybody was – all of college football Twitter was – remember the South Dakota State game week one where they didn't score an offensive touchdown? They scored, like, 7 points because I think they got two safeties or something ridiculous, and ended up winning the game 7-3. It's they're going to be a fascinating watch just because of that. And the fan base is just – irritated. I read a story by Scott Docterman at The Athletic. He was just like, you know, they've done this before where the offense, like, tanked like this, but not at this bad level. And where it really can start hurting is season ticket sales, because the fans is so upset that a lot of people might not renew season tickets. And that could have a cause and effect there. Yeah. So I'm very interested to see how that plays out. And Gary Barta, I mean, he's just doing what Kirk Ferentz wants. He's not stepping in the way, and he's not forcing him to do anything. So now people are mad at him. It's just a wild development there at Iowa. And Kentucky will, unfortunately, well, who knows? They might play him in a bowl game again.
We're running it back.
It would be Outback Bowl, Iowa, Kentucky.
Oh man, that would be hilarious. Don't want to see that happen. Don't want to see that happen. But like, this has been fun. It's been fun doing it live. I like ripping it live. I like chatting with the fans, mixing it up. I think next week we'll probably dive into our coaching carousel pod. That is, if Jim Harbaugh still isn't interviewing with any NFL team that will want to. That's been really bizarre.
I'm hoping, Nick, I'm hoping really to get the Alabama coordinators hired by then.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a big deal.
Has not been inspiring either.
The Ryan Grubb name was weird. Because by all accounts, because he's with Kalen DeBoer, by all accounts, that's DeBoer's offense.
Right.
I'm not sure if he calls the plays. You're hiring a guy's number two to be the offensive coordinator at Alabama. Like that. And Todd Grantham's like the new defensive name that's in the mix there. Like, that's worth talking about because obviously the recruiting is not slowing down Alabama. They're probably going to have one of the best rosters, but they have a lot of unknowns like quarterback. Jalen Monroe, Ty Simpson, you know, both were highly ranked, but we'll see. None of them are Bryce Young or Tua coming in where it wasn't no doubter. Alabama's going to be good at quarterback. I think there's more variance with those two guys. And then the draft roster's just, you know, it's good shape, but they lost a lot of, like, leadership and star power off that team. You know, we expect young guys to step in, but they're in a different spot here. Georgia's kind of back-to-back titles. They're the king on the block now. Like, I very much want to see what he does there because I could see that, you know, maybe – like, if they were ever going to fall down to an 8-4, like, this kind of beats – to me, this is a scenario for it. If he coordinators, quarterback is not a superstar, you know, and maybe it's a good time for Kentucky to have a home game with them. But, well, I mean, we'll see how that all plays out. They're still talent-wise, they're off the charts. But – Things
seem to be tricky in November.
Yeah, we'll see who the coordinators are, but I did not say that in November. But things are trending their wrong way.
Told Nick Saban what home personnel is now telling Nick Saban he's losing to Kentucky.
These have been very unflattering, the candidates that have leaked out so far, and it's taken him a long time to make a hire on both of these spots. Just stay away from Brad White.
Yeah, please. Please and thank you. Please and thank you. And thank you all for listening to 11 Personnel. Remember to use promo code PERSONNEL at mybookie.ag. And we'll be back this time next week. For Adam Luck and I'm Nick Roush. Go Cats and go Kroger.